good morning to all of you. I don't know how many weeks we're going to be looking at hymns. We have looked at lessons from soldiers and children and kings and lepers, and we have looked at lessons from psalms, and for the last little while we've been looking at hymns that we sing in our churches, and I want to continue that today. I've got two or three more weeks queued up, and probably will end about 3 weeks from now. In the morning service at 8 o'clock, we sang three hymns. One of those I thought was really interesting, and I asked at the first hour if our study, our look at hymns over the last few weeks had caused people in the services that traditionally use the hymns as we are reading them, to listen to those hymns and read those hymns and think about those hymns differently. And the answer was yes. I hope that's happening a bit with you guys as well. And I hope that opportunities will come where you can hear these hymns and think about them. Here's one that we sang this morning. Open my eyes that I may see glimpses of truth thou hast for me. Place in my hands the wonderful key that will unclasp and set me free. Open my ears that I may hear voices of truth thou sendest clear. And while the wave notes fall on my ear, everything false will disappear. Open my mouth and let me bear gladly the warm truth everywhere. Open my heart and let me prepare love with thy children thus to share. Silently now I wait for thee, ready my God thy will to see. Open my eyes, illumine me, Spirit divine. That's a pretty powerful hymn. As we look at hymns, one of the things that we see is that sometimes the hymns are a celebration of something, and sometimes they're an exploration of something, and sometimes they're an expression of something. One of the hymns that's a celebration is this one. For the beauty of the earth, for the glory of the skies, for the love which from our birth over and around us lies. Lord of all, to thee we raise this our hymn of grateful praise. Do you guys know that chorus? Do you know that little chorus? Can you sing it with me? Lord of all, to thee we raise this our hymn of grateful praise. For the wonder of each hour, of the day and of the night. I'm not sure the writer is talking about time on a clock. You listen to Kevin Glenn today, and he talked about sometimes there's good things and there's sometimes bad things that we pass through and what we can learn from those. Day and night can also mean good times and hard times. For the wonder of each hour, of the day and of the night, hill and vale, tree and flower, sun and moon and stars of light. Lord of all, to thee we raise this our hymn of grateful praise. For the joy of human love, brother, sister, parent, child, friends on earth and friends above, for all gentle thoughts and mind. Lord of all, to thee we raise this our hymn of grateful praise. For the church that evermore lifteth holy hands above, offering up on every shore her pure sacrifice of love. For thyself, best gift divine, to our race so freely given, for that great, great love of thine, peace on earth and joy in heaven. Lord of all, to thee we raise this our hymn of grateful praise. What comes to your heart, what comes to your mind when you listen to those words of celebration? What thoughts come to you? Life isn't always happy, and yet that song sounds happy all the way through. There's a hint or two here and there.
But it harkens back to what Kevin talked about this morning. Whatever the circumstances that we're passing through, there's opportunity to be grateful and raise our praise to God for His presence.
Mm-hmm. Not easy to do, but that's what we're called upon to do.
You know, it's still fun, not fun, but not hard. There's a lot of things to listen to, and then also, you know, pen, like you're talking about, you know, we're always so joyous over the worldly accomplishments, you know, like it'd be, you know, getting a new job or, you know, hitting the lottery or anything like that. But, you know, I don't know about y'all, but with me and life in general, you know, when I feel, you know, the best about myself is probably doing the down for what we would think of as low points in life. And when you go and you help somebody else out and you do something you love for somebody else, you know, I mean, you know, a big bonus check is great, but I mean, I've never had anybody hand me a big bonus check and me feel any type of real satisfaction, let's say, or any type of, oh, what a wonderful thing this is. But whereas, you know, maybe you go and help somebody that really needs help, you know, their thank you is so much more to me than that bonus check. So, I get a random, but, you know, that's sort of my philosophy. And certainly today.
Anybody else?
I think one thing that strikes me is the contrast between happiness and joy. And this is a fleeting thing. Happiness is something that we see, what we don't see. But joy, true joy, is victory for that which makes us unhappy. And I think sometimes we pursue happiness, and it's a very elusive dead-end alley in many cases. But joy is like joy is depicted by Jesus, and this joy is depicted in the Bible.
Scripture talks much more about peace and joy than it does about happiness. I think you've hit an important point there. Try this one. Like a river glorious is God's perfect peace, over all victorious in its bright increase. Perfect, yet it floweth fuller every day. Perfect, yet it groweth deeper all the way. I don't know if you know the chorus of this one, but it goes like this. Stayed upon Jehovah, hearts are fully blessed, finding as he promised, perfect peace and rest. Now listen to the second one and think about if it doesn't sound like something of what the Ewells have gone through in the past week. Hidden in the hollow of his blessed hand, never foe can follow, never traitor stand. Not a surge of worry, not a shade of care, not a blast of hurry touch the spirit there. Stayed upon Jehovah, hearts are fully blessed, finding as he promised, perfect peace and rest. Third stanza. Every joy or trial falleth from above, traced upon our dial by the Son of Love. We may trust him fully, all for us to do. They who trust him wholly find him wholly true. Stayed upon Jehovah, hearts are fully blessed, finding, as he promised, perfect peace and rest. This may be one of those hymns that at certain times of your life you may aspire to rather than be able to sing. You may realize God's calling you to get back to the point where you can sing that. But there is a way of finding a shelter while the storm is still going on. And that's what this talks about. Comments? Anybody? Let me try a related one, or at least one I think is related. Guide me, O thou great Jehovah, pilgrim through this barren land. I am weak, but you are mighty. Hold me with your powerful hand. Bread of heaven, feed me till I want no more. Open now the crystal fountain whence the healing stream doth flow. Let the fire and cloudy pillar, references to the Exodus, lead me all my journey through. Strong deliverer, be thou still my strength and shield. when I tread the verge of Jordan, bid my anxious fears subside. Bear me through the swelling current. Land me safe on Canaan's side. Songs of praises, I will ever give to thee. This one talks about guidance in a way the others haven't. I think sort of completes a thought. Bob Cochran talked in the first hour a bit about how he lived his whole life with a strong sense of God's guidance, leading him to each place he went.
That one almost even had a twang of deliverance. It was kind of handling it, so it's like delivering you from this storm or situation.
You're going to go through some things, but God is still with us as we go through. Echoes almost to the 23rd Psalm, when I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil because you're with me. This is a point maybe to stop and do something that represents a little bit of danger because of what's already gone on today. You'll see the point in just a minute. It has to do with you and you and a couple of others, especially Mr. Viking shirt back here. A long time ago, I realized that in my job, I didn't travel much. But each time I did travel, I made sure that I was on the frequent flyer lists for whatever airline I was flying. And the result is I accumulate a few flyer miles. And typically, if you sign up online for a flight and you do this and you do this, they'll double the miles you get, something like that. So I would end up with a few thousand miles. And what I've discovered is I can never get anything useful out of this in terms of a free flight somewhere. But I found out a few years back I can trade frequent flyer miles for magazine subscriptions. It's a good deal. For something like 1,200 miles, 1,500 miles, something like that, you can get a year subscription to Sports Illustrated. And what I found was that I had 9,000 miles on one airline, and so I just signed up for as many subscriptions to Sports Illustrated as I could get for $1,200 a pop. And I've now got, you know, 6-7 years in the future, I'll be getting Sports Illustrated. Right? Sports Illustrated's issue this week is unusual. It is unusual. A decade ago, I can't remember if it's plus or minus 2 or 3 years, sometime back, Green Bay was getting ready to play in the Super Bowl. Reggie White was playing on the line. And I knew that Reggie White was a pastor because he had a church in Knoxville where my brother lived, and I knew something about him from that. And Sports Illustrated had an article that I got a glimpse of that talked about the people who were going to be playing with that team in the Super Bowl. And there were several of them who 2 or 3 years earlier had been driving trucks for a living. And they had gotten one more chance to come back to what you might call the big show. And they were making the most of that. And Reggie White had a spiritual dimension that he brought to that team. And these guys were responding to it. And when they went into the Super Bowl, I cheered for Green Bay. It had nothing to do with their record or all that kind of stuff. It just had to do with the character and composition of the people who were playing. Okay? This week, Sports Illustrated has articles about the four teams that are going to be playing today for the right to play in the Super Bowl. You read those articles and you realize this year there are four teams like that Green Bay team way back when. I've not ever been aware of a time like this. You listen to what is happening, people getting second chances and being able to talk about that in tones of appreciation, recognizing the opportunities they have. That probably is not true of every single player on every single team, but it seems to be true of so many players on each of these four teams that you almost get the sense that this year I can't lose. It doesn't matter too much who wins. It's going to be somebody worth cheering for. And every team in there is worth cheering for. This is a really interesting year. They have quotations in there that some of them go back to the 1500s. People have looked at old words of wisdom from people who sort of thought through some of these issues a long time ago. And those quotations are in there. And more modern quotations are in there. People, words that they're living by. And it's really interesting how faith has a piece. Now, alongside of this was another article about a team in the NBA. As God is my witness, I did not know this team existed until I saw this article. Okay? If I'm reading the article right, the Seattle team closed down shop and moved. I didn't know that. They moved to Oklahoma City, which is now the smallest market that NBA is represented in. And they talked about the contrast that these players were experiencing between nightlife in Oklahoma City and nightlife in Chicago or New York or whatever, and the fact that these guys that are playing for this team are thriving in this atmosphere. Okay? They said they do not have a starting five. They have a starting nine. And the average age of the starting nine, this is the Oklahoma City Thunder. I had not heard that name until this week. The starting nine, the average age is 23. Rookies and second-year players mostly. And they are playing as a team. They all understand opportunities that they have. They've been on national television two times. I think they said Cleveland with LeBron James has been on national television not quite 30 times. You know, nobody knows about this team. They're going to come out of the woodwork later. But you start reading about this, and the people on this team are saying, we've got an opportunity. We can play together. We can learn. We can do things. And you start to hear people appreciating what they have rather than bewailing the fact that they're not in one of the major markets and they're not on TV and all the kinds of things that happen. The stream that's running through all of this seems to me to echo some of the things that we just read in these hymns. Some of them are talking about how they feel like God is guiding them. Some of them were talking about second opportunities or third opportunities or fourth opportunities. A few of them were driving a truck a year or two ago. And not that there's anything wrong with driving a truck, but it's a big step from that. I can remember, we've got to see the picture of Leland right now, but Leland Melvin was cut by one of the pro teams because of injuries. And next thing you know, he's a courier. He's running packages around Richmond. And turned a corner and started something new and then has ended up going all the places he's gone. Bob Cochran talked eloquently about the nature and role of God's guidance and the response to that guidance in making a difference in how life was led. And that song has picked that up. Any other comments on that one?
Just a quick, you know, the story about Kurt Warner. Falls into that same category.
Yeah, the teams that aren't in there still have some of that character to them.
Well, one was bagging groceries, and the next year he's in the NFL.
Yeah, and when I look at it, I really enjoy cheering for a team like that, and there seems to be enough of those out there right now that hit that. And I'll make no comments about the teams that I haven't listed, but there are some differences out there that sometimes I think come into this.
Then when you talk about Reggie White, he was the one who started the prayer going after the games and yeah. Called on like wildfire. Other people in other games started doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I guess some people saw the news with Haiti. They pulled a lady out that had been in the rubble, trapped under concrete for a week. And when they pulled her out, she was singing praises and hymns to God. And, you know, she'd been without water for a week. And I don't know if the human body can't go that long without water. I don't believe it.
Yeah, they
should. Here's a country that is not a Christian country by no means. This lady comes out and says hymns and praises to God.
I forget whether it's NBC or one of the other programs had a picture of a guy with a guitar in a marketplace leading some songs of praise. There's something about the ability of words and music to express some things. I've got two left, and I'm trying to hold time for us to talk about them because these two are among the giants of hymns that we have. They're very different from each other, but I think they complement each other in an interesting way. The first of these, you have to listen to all four verses before you see the whole thought. It's not a thought is expressed in one verse and then a new thought is expressed in another. The thoughts move from verse to verse to verse to pick up a picture. And we're going to see a couple of hymns in weeks to come that do this as well. Capturing in verse and song a deep spiritual truth or a truth and some of the ramifications of that truth. This one was written by Martin Luther and it probably tells you what song it is. A mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing, our helper he amid the flood of mortal ills prevailing. For still our ancient foe doth seek to do us woe, to work us woe. His craft and power are great, and armed with cruel hate, on earth is not his equal. Did we in our own strength confide, our striving would be losing. We're not the right man on our side, a man of God's own choosing. Dost ask who that may be? Christ Jesus, it is he, Lord Sabaoth, his name, from age to age the same. And he must win the battle. And though this world with devils filled should threaten to undo us, we will not fear. Listen carefully to this next phrase. We will not fear, for God has willed his truth to triumph through us. The prince of darkness grim, we tremble not for him. His rage we can endure, for lo, his doom is sure. One little word will fail him. That word, above all earthly powers, no thanks to them, abideth. The spirit and the gifts are ours through him who with us sideth. Let goods and kindred go, this mortal life also. The body they may kill, God's truth abideth still. His kingdom is forever. As hymns go, that one's dense. There's a lot to it. I picked out the phrase that hit me the strongest today. We will not fear, for God has willed his truth to triumph. He could have stopped there, but it wouldn't have said the same thing, would it? For God has willed his truth to triumph. How? Through us. What comments do you have? How does this one hit you?
It hits you a lot. For me, it hits a lot more powerfully listening to you read it than it ever has in church, singing it. Because I don't think about, you're singing. I don't know. It seems like I don't think about what.
There are breaks at the end of musical lines. There are breaks and phrases that don't put this together that way. Especially that one, did we in our own strength confide, our striving would be losing. We don't normally connect those two when we sing it. It's almost like you end a question halfway through and you don't realize all that it's saying.
Bill, that's my all-time favorite hymn. And I just love the victory.
There are many people who think, and I join them, that we live in a world that has spiritual warfare. C.S. Lewis has written the Screwtape Letters and a few other things like that, where he gives you his sense of what that warfare might be like. It's almost like we're just oblivious to the challenges that come. There's an extremely powerful hymn that I'm going to bring in about 3 weeks from now, 2 weeks from now. The opening line is, once to every man and nation comes a moment to decide. And when you read that one in context with this one, you realize that warfare is going on, and God is going to win those battles. But if his truth is going to triumph through us, we've got critical decisions to make. And I heard somebody say one time, here was the illustration. It was on an English educational institution. I don't know if it was a university or one of their public schools. Public schools in Britain are private schools, right? You know that, right? If you go to a public school, that means you're really in a private school. Anyway, there was one of the teachers was on his way to church, and one of the students saw the preacher and said, decided to get up and go to church today, huh? And the teacher responded, no. I decided to get up and go to church today. Not today, but I decided that 40 years ago. I decided that a pattern in my life would be that when Sunday came, I would go to church. That's a piece of what those things talk about. That's a piece of this. If you understand how this world works, that Satan takes the price tags and moves them all around where things that aren't worth much start to look valuable by the world systems. And we miss the things that have true value. I had someone after the first hour say just about that. It's taken me the last 6 months to get to the point where I start to realize what really has value and what doesn't, and how blind I was. But now I see, picking up from another hymn.
You know, the other thing that you get out of this, you know, what amazes me, I guess, is, you know, going through the hurdles of life, and we're all faced with different hurdles, unfortunately. Some people have to use the pole vault to get over their hurdles. Fortunately, you know, some of us can just step over the little puddles of life. But, you know, I think the practice of studying the Word, really having faith in God's Word and in His hymn, you know, allows you to face those obstacles, you know, whether they be unsurmountable or the puddles. And even the hymn seems to suggest that, you know, this faith is what's going to get you over or through these things, and that despite what you may think, eventually you will get to a final resting place, whether it be over the hurdle during this life, but, you know, and Lord forbid that that final resting place be either, you know, your death and moving into, you know, God's world, or something of that nature. But it is being rooted in faith, I think, is suggesting is how you get through these things. You know, the stronger your faith,
you said something interesting that brought a picture back to me, and the picture is hilarious, so I'll take the risk of sharing it in the middle of something fairly serious. You talked about, you know, sort of how tough the road might be. Everybody knows what a tight wire walker is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My father and my uncle both taught at a college with Baptist roots in East Tennessee, Carson Newman, if you know of that school. And back in the 50s and early 60s, they used to have what they call faculty follies in the spring, where the faculty would come in and do silly things, and the people would have to buy tickets to be able to see them do silly things, and the ticket money that they paid would go to summer missions, where the kids could go out and do missionary work in the summers and have some money for it. My uncle was the chair of the English department, a very dignified man. He dressed up in a tutu with a little pink parasol and tights, and I have a photograph of it. If you're a Facebook fan, you can be a fan of mine, and you can be on a Facebook friend of mine, and you can go see the picture if you want to. He did what he called a slack rope walk. Now, what would that be? Can you picture that? He simply laid a rope 25, 30 feet long across the floor of the stage. It's just on the floor. And he puts his feet on the rope and proceeds to walk as if it's a tightrope, you know, about to fall off and all this kind of stuff. I can remember laughing for hours after watching that thing. There's something funny about that, but there's not something funny about the tightrope that many of us walk. Sometimes it's tough to follow the path that we go. Sometimes we get pressure from all sides, and we feel like that's what we're on. What God is calling us to is faithfulness to Him. What He has promised is His presence with us as we go through these things. And hiding between those two is a much greater stability than most of us find. Did we in our own strength confide, our striving would be losing. We're not the right man on our side, the man of God's own choosing.
It's almost a reminder.
Uh-huh. We try to do so much in our own strength.
Bobby? Earlier this week, Bill, on my devotional time, and how we as historically got into mistakenness in this particular event. And two points that it made was, one, if we had no adversity, we'd never know whether God could take us through. And the other point was, we would never have the faith that God will take us through.
Jim Pardew gave an illustration one day that is close to where I just was. Guy stretches a rope between two places, maybe across Niagara Falls or between two buildings or something like that. Walks across the thing, gets to the other side, and all the crowd cheers and cheers and cheers and cheers and cheers. And he grabs a wheelbarrow that it has the wheel. The wheelbarrow has been taken off, so it's just the rim, and it has sort of a thing like this. And he says, okay, now I'm going to go back across, and I'm going to put somebody in this wheelbarrow, and we're going to wheel them across the crowd. That's crazy. That's great. And he points to one guy down front and says, you think I can do this? I said, absolutely. And he says, hop in the wheelbarrow. There's a point where God says, I've got a good plan for you, but I call you to take a step. Faith. Our step of faith is not getting in a wheelbarrow with an idiot who's trying to walk across the road. I do not recommend that. But
well, it's sort of like the rich man's old desire to be anyone. I mean, it's hard, especially in this world. And I mean, I think a lot of it may be our foes' way of fighting, the God's spiritual words. He makes that step so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be through peer pressure or it be through, whatever.
Last hymn for the morning. Sing the first verse with me, will you? You'll catch on quickly. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. Listen to the second verse. 'Twas grace that taught me how to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I've already come. Grace has brought me safe this far. Grace will lead me home. Remember I was talking about Ebenezer a few weeks ago? A monument was put up, and the prophet led the people to say, what does the monument mean? God has led me this far. The Lord has promised good to me. His word, my hope, secures. He will my shield and portion be as long as life endures. My son was a freshman in college. My daughter was a senior in college. Jim Erb was the choral director, and they were both in his choir. It was Jim Erb's last year. He had been on the staff at the University of Richmond leading the choirs for something in excess of 40 years. And this was his last year. They decided to make a recording that year in honor of his retirement. And they didn't have enough basses. So I got to sing with them. So all three of us are on the recording. The last cut on that album is a setting that he wrote of Amazing Grace. My mother had a cousin who was one of the first ethnomusicologists the United States had ever known. They didn't have a name for ethnomusicology when he became one. They had to figure out what he was doing and then give it a name. He's written an arrangement of Amazing Grace that if you didn't know better, you'd think you were in Preservation Hall in New Orleans, because it's got a very sort of deep south jazz arrangement to it. Jim Erb's arrangement was mountain music. old Scotch-Irish mountain music. There's something ironic in the fact that so much of this setting of the music, mountain music, right, is set with the people singing, listen to the words, an open fifth. I think that's very funny because up in the mountains they would sometimes make things that you might sell in fifths. But that was one of the musical signatures of this thing. I don't know how many settings you've ever heard of this thing. It's been translated and said in so many places. But there's two verses Jim Hall found that were apparently original with John Newton, the old slave captain who became a preacher. Not too long ago, we went through that movie, Amazing Grace, and we're looking at pieces out of this. So we've thought about this not too long ago. I'm told that the what we call the last verse, John Newton didn't write. It was added by somebody later. But Jim Irb found two verses that I hadn't known of before, and they appear to be in the original that John Newton wrote. Listen to these. The last one, the Lord has promised good to me. His word my hope secures. He will my shield and portion be as long as life endures. Yes, when this flesh and heart will fail, and mortal life shall cease, I will possess within the veil a life of joy and peace. The earth will soon dissolve like snow. The sun forbear to shine. But he who called me here below will be forever mine. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. Saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. You guys remember the last verse? The one that looks like John Newton might not have written? When we've been there 10,000 years, bright, shining as the sun, we've no less days to sing his praise than when we first begun. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. Saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. What comes to your mind? What do you hear? What do you feel?
As I've been listening to the audience and smiling with joy, what comes to my mind is being able to dwell in the
wilderness. We're hitting that one in a week or two.
No matter what you face, no matter what's coming your way, with that faith we have in God, and in the experience we've already had with God, we have that certainty that our soul is well.
This is a preview, but do you remember the first two lines of the hymn that he's talking about? When peace like a river attendeth my soul. When sorrows like sea billows roll. Whatever my lot, you've taught me to say, it's well, it is well with my soul. I don't know if there's any hymn that is spoken to more people than this one. And I don't know if it's the lost and now found and blind but now see, or whether it's that part that is so scriptural. Proverbs says, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. And Isaiah says, don't be afraid, don't be afraid, don't be afraid. It was grace that taught my heart to fear, and then grace my fears relieved. I don't know which of those two jumps out at folks. What else comes to your mind? John?
What comes to my mind, because a few years ago, well, probably about 2 years ago, Bill Moyer did a piece on Amazing Grace and went throughout the whole country, the different cultures, the different regions like Appalachia, the Deep South, the Black Church, the White Church, New Orleans, like you said, in a different way that this song is sung by each group, but among each and every one of them is held so high in esteem.
I had a friend who's African American told me, I don't know, 6 years ago, 8 years ago, you know this is one of those black hymns in the songbook, right? And I said, what do you mean? With a little bit of a twist to it. You know what he said? He said, the black hymns are the ones you can play using only the black keys on a piano. Did you know that? I checked it out. He's right. Ta 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 Black keys all the way across. Works like a charm. I didn't know that. And you know what he said? He said, this song says something to black folks because of who it's written by, as well as what it says. Slave ship captain turns into a preacher. And that was a little slice of what that great movie, Amazing Grace, captured, was sort of what John Newton's life was like and how that changed. I think, Rhonda, it was your week that we actually walked through some of the details of John Newton's transformation, to use that word. What else?
Whenever I hear the song Amazing Grace, you know, I go to the place of gratitude. And I'm sitting over there, it's like I want to share this, but I don't know if I can do it without crying. You know, Russell and I, we just celebrated our 6th anniversary, and so we've got about 7 years of blending these 4 kids, and each coming from just horrific life experiences that we have been in. And I think we're in such a moment, we're in such a season of gratitude in our home. I mean, he and I talk about it, we've been talking about it a lot lately, about how the family has grown to love each other and operate in a way that so far exceeds our expectations. And I can't do it, I want to give her a shake. It's just been uncanny. It's just unexplainable. It's we went on vacation right after we left Christmas Day from Lake Placid with the kids for a week, and we spent every night at dinner laughing to the point where we thought we were going to be kicked out of every restaurant we were in, and that's the way we operate. And we were in Outback last week, laughing so hard we thought we were going to be kicked out. And you know, our family gets around, the 6 of us get around a table, and we can hardly. It's like we're eating and laughing and talking. We're talking and laughing, and we're kind of eating. You know, it is just a riot. And you know the wall art that you can get now that you stencil on the wall. I've been looking for something fun, and just day before yesterday, I found one that was just as simple as the greatest memories are made when the fondest memories are made when gathered around the table. And so I was able to put that in the kitchen because
And yet, when you think about where you have been and what you've come through to get to this place, gratitude just emerges automatically.
And what even the 6 of us have been through. I mean, even with, you know, with ex-families and vacations and holidays and, growing and now they're driving. And it's just amazing the years we've been through, elementary to middle to high school and embarking on college. And it just totally, God has blessed our family. He's blessed with the opportunity for me to not be home for a while. I mean, it's just, everything about it totally exceeds what we ever thought we could put together. And we're having a ball, and we feel so free from the past.
I think this might be the time to tell you a little story about what happened this week. You all do know I teach chemistry, right?
Thank goodness you don't teach them in here.
Not very often. I had a group of maybe 6 or 7 kids. We've moved to a new class schedule, and at first I didn't like it, and now I really do like it, because what it gives us is 30 minutes between classes. And so the kids don't rush to leave. And so 6 or 7 of them were still there, and they were talking. One of them said, and the others were nodding their heads as in agreement, she said, I have been so frustrated and angry and despondent all at the same time over this last week and a half. I was working to try to understand these things, and I couldn't see it, I couldn't do it. I was trying these exercises you gave us, and none of it came. And today, in class, it all clicked, and it all made sense. And I think I'm ready for the test on Monday. I think I can do all the things I need. And the others were saying, yeah, that's the way they feel, too. I hope that's true. But what I said to them was, remember this feeling, because you're going to have it a minimum of 8 to 10 more times. Okay? You hit something. I'm only talking about chemistry. I'm not talking about anything else. You hit something in chemistry, and you think, I'm never going to understand this. It just makes no sense. But I said, if you will do the things I ask you to do, even if they don't seem to be working, if you will wrestle with them and come to class and talk about it, I think I can get you to the point where you can get out of that. But the moment I get you to where you're clear on one thing, I'm about to dump a whole nother load of stuff on you, and then we got to work through that as well. And we're going to just go back and forth on this. Now, I say that because as I was talking to them, I started thinking, life has something in character with that. Something hits us, and we think, why is this happening? What do we learn from this? What am I supposed to experience from this? Am I ever going to be able to recover from this? Where can I go? Life sometimes will never be the same. But there can still be a place of joy and a place of peace if we just do the things God calls us to do. Work with Him and don't turn away from Him. Listen to Him, follow Him, His guidance and other things. We can get to the point where we see the beauty of the earth again. We can get to the point where we find His peace and rest. It isn't false. It is true. And the hardest times are when you're in the middle of it. But if you've ever gone through something like this and can remember, then maybe the next time you're caught in this, because I think life throws this at us, the next time you're caught, you can start to say, which is what mature Christians say, I've been in places like this before and God has led me through. He's going to lead me through this one too. And then some of the things we've been reading this morning come true. God has created us to be in fellowship with Him, and God has created us to be in fellowship with each other. The encouragement we give each other, the support we give each other. Do you remember the phrase, we will not fear, for God has willed His truth, what? To triumph through us. Remember that? That's what has leaped out at me today. There's a verse in Ezekiel. You need to read the context if you ever go there, but it's Ezekiel's 36:23. God is speaking and He says, I'm going to display the holiness of My great name where everyone in the world will know who I am and know My holiness. And then He adds these horrible, scary words. I'm going to accomplish this when I display My holiness before their eyes, in you. God has created us to be in relationship with Him and in relationship with each other so that when the world sees the Lord and the Lord at work, He sees that through us. That's the way He's built us. And so sometimes the way we react to hard times becomes a witness more powerful than anything else. We do not want to have that witness because we don't want those hard times. They are hard. But God can use those. Kevin Glenn talked about that eloquently, I thought, in his sermon today when he talked about hard times sometimes give us a better path to understanding who God is and become closer to Him and more useful in His kingdom than the good times. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound, saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. Y'all have a good day.